Chapter 15. Hyatt Regency Hotel, Kathmandu, Nepal. Sam stepped out of the bathroom with a towel wrapped around his waist and rubbing his hair with another. You hungry for a nice breakfast?
Famished, replied Remy. She was sitting at a table in front of the mirror, tying her hair into a ponytail. She wore the standard white towel of the hotel.
Room service or go down to the dining room?
The weather is perfect. Let's dine out on the balcony.
Sounds good. Sam walked over to an end table, picked up the phone, and dialed room service. I'd like one salmon and a bagel, one eggs benedict, a bowl of fruit, and sourdough toast and coffee. He waited until the voice in the kitchen repeated the order correctly. Then he rang off and called the bar. When the bartender answered, Sam asked, I'd like two Ramos fizzes. Yes, a Ramos fizz.
You know how to treat a lady, said Remy.
Don't get your hopes up. He doesn't know how to make one.
Sam tried again.
How about a Harvey Wallbanger?
Wallbanger. It's made with vodka, Galliano, and orange juice.
I see, no Galliano.
Sam shook his head and tried once more.
All right, send up a bottle of Veuve Clicquot.
Remy laughed.
You really know how to treat a lady.
That's the best you do, said Sam into the phone.
Okay, send it up well chilled. He set the receiver back in its cradle. No champagne. The only thing left after a political convention is a sparkling white from China.
I didn't know the Chinese made anything sparkling.
She looked at him with a sarcastic smile.
Is that the best you can do?
Sam shrugged. Any port in the storm. The phone rang. Sam picked it up. One moment. He switched on the speaker.
Morning, Rube, Sam said into the speakerphone.
For you, maybe, Rube replied. It's dinner time here. I hear you and your lovely bride are enjoying yet another relaxing vacation.
Everything is relative, Rube, Remy replied. How are Kathy and the girls?
Great. They're at Chuck E. Cheese's right now. Your call saved me from going.
Don't let us keep you, Sam said with a half smile.
We can talk later. Oh no, my friend, there's nothing more important than this. Trust me.
Okay, brief me. Are you in jail? How many local laws have you broken?
No, and none that we're aware of, Remy replied.
I'll let Sam explain.
Though aware Rube had already received some information from Selma, Sam started at the beginning, with Jilan Su boarding their boat near Pulau Lagundi and ending with their escape from King's covert archaeological site. The night before, after leaving their pursuers stalled on the bridge, Sam had driven through the darkness, looking for signs or landmarks that Remy could match to her map. After several hours of fruitless turns and dead ends, they finally crossed a recognizable mountain pass, the Laurabina, and not long after pulled into the outskirts of Fieti, some 20 miles due east of the camp. Predictably, they'd found the village dark and lifeless, save a cinder block and tin-roofed building that turned out to be the local pub. After breaking through the considerable language barrier, they managed to make a trade with the owner. Their truck for his car, a 30-year-old orange and primer gray Peugeot, and directions back to Kathmandu. Just before dawn, they pulled into the Hyatt Regency's parking lot. Rube listened to Sam's story without speaking. Finally, he asked,
Let me make sure I understand this. You snuck into King's camp, witnessed a murder, wreaked havoc with what were probably a guard contingent of Chinese soldiers, then stole one of their trucks that happened to be loaded with black market fossils, which you then used as depth charges to stop your pursuers. Does that about cover it?
More or less, Sam said.
Remy added, and the 30 or so gigabytes of intelligence we collected. Rube sighed.
You know what I did last night? I painted our master bathroom.
You too.
Okay, send me your data.
Selma's already got it. Contact her and she'll give you a link to a secure online storage site.
Got it. I know my bosses at Langley will be interested in the Chinese angle, and I'm sure we can find someone at the FBI interested in King's black market fossil operation. I can't promise any of it will pan out, but I'll run with it.
That's all we ask, Sam said.
There's a better-than-average chance that King's already ordered the site shut down. By now, it could be just an abandoned pit in the middle of the forest.
We know.
What about your friend Alton?
We're half-hoping, half-guessing we've found what King wants, Remy replied. Or at least enough to get his attention.
We're calling him after we hang up with you.
King Charlie is scum, Rube warned. People have been trying to take him down all his life. They're all dead or ruined, and he's still standing.
Remy replied, Something tells me what we've got is very personal for him.
The Thurok.
Thurang, Remy corrected. The Golden Man.
Right. It's a gamble, Rube replied. If you're wrong and King doesn't give a damn about the thing, all you've got are allegations of black market fossil trade. And like I said, there's no guarantee anything will stick to him.
We know, Sam replied. And you're going to roll the dice anyway.
Yes, said Remy.
Big surprise. By the way, before I forget, I've learned a little more about Louis King. I assume you've both heard of Heinrich Himmler?
Hitler's best friend and Nazi psychopath? Sam asked.
We've heard the name.
Himmler and most of the upper echelon of the Nazi Party were obsessed with the occult, especially as it pertained to Aryan purity and the Thousand-Year Reich. Himmler was arguably the most intrigued by it. Back in the 30s and throughout World War II, he sponsored a number of scientific expeditions to the world's darkest corners in hopes of finding evidence to support the Nazis' claims. One of them, organized in 1938, a year before the war started, was dispatched to the Himalayas in search of evidence of Aryan ancestry.
Care to guess the name of one of the lead scientists?
Louis King, Remy replied.
Or as he was known then, Professor Lewis Koenig.
Sam said, Charlie King's father was a Nazi?
Yes and no. My sources tell me he probably joined the party out of necessity, not zealousness. Back then, if you wanted government funding, you needed to be a party member. There are plenty of accounts of scientists joining and doing perfunctory research into Nazi theories so they could conduct pure scientific research on the side. Louis King was a perfect example of this. By all accounts, he was a dedicated archaeologist. He didn't give a damn about Aryan bloodlines or ancestry.
So why did he go on the expedition?
I don't know, but what you found in the cave, this Golden Man business, is a strong possibility. Unless King was lying, it sounds like soon after Louis King immigrated to the U.S., he started his globetrotting.
Maybe he found something on Himmler's expedition that piqued his interest, Sam speculated.
Something he didn't want to end up in the hands of the Nazis, Remy added. He kept it to himself, bided his time through the war, then picked up his work again years later.
The question is, Rube said, why is Charlie King picking up where his father left off? From what we know about him, he never showed the slightest interest in his father's work.
Maybe it's the Thurang, Sam said. Maybe to him it's just another fossil to sell.
You could be right. If the description of this thing is even remotely accurate, it would be worth a fortune.
Remy asked, Rube, do we know whether the Nazi accusations against Louis ever impacted Charlie?
Not that I could find. I think his success speaks for itself, and given how ruthless he is, I doubt anyone has the guts to bring it up anymore.
That's about to change, Sam said. Time to push King Charlie's comfort zone.
They hung up, talked strategy for a few minutes, then Sam dialed King's direct line. The man himself picked up on the first ring.
King.
Mr. King. Sam Fargo here.
I was wondering when you'd get around to calling. Your pretty wife with you?
Safe and sound, Remy replied sweetly.
It seems our partnership has hit a rocky patch, King said. My kids tell me you ain't playing ball.
We're playing ball, Sam replied,
just a different game than you are. Charlie, did you have Frank Alton kidnapped?
Kidnapped?
Why would I do something like that?
That's not an answer, Remy pointed out.
I sent Frank Alton out there to do a job for me. He got himself in over his head, pissed off the wrong people. I have no idea where he is.
Another non-answer answer, Sam said. Okay, let's move on. All you have to do is listen. We've got what you're after.
And what's that?
You're not listening. We've got what you're after. What your dad spent his lifetime hunting for. And as you probably guessed, we paid a visit to your concentration camp in the Longtong Valley.
I got no idea what you're talking about.
We collected thousands of photos, mostly of documents we found laying around in an office trailer, but a few of them of your wife or concubine or whatever you call her in the privacy of your Gulf Stream. As luck would have it, when we took the pictures, she was murdering one of your employees. We've got a picture of his face as well.
Charlie King did not respond for a long 10 seconds. Finally, he sighed.
I think you're full of horse crap, Sam. But clearly something's got you excited. You've got my attention.
First things first. Release Frank. I told you I don't...
Shut up. Release Frank Alton. When we get a call from him saying he's safe and unharmed in the comfort of his home, we'll meet with Russell and Marjorie and reach an understanding.
Now who's saying a lot without saying much? King replied.
It's the only deal you're going to get, Sam replied.
Sorry, friend, I'm going to decline. I think you're bluffing.
Suit yourself, Sam said, and hung up.
He laid the phone on the coffee table. He and Remy looked at each other. She asked,
Odds?
60-40 it rings in under a minute. She smiled.
No bet.
At the 50-second mark, Sam's phone trilled. He let it go off 3 more times, then picked up.
Charlie King said, You'd make a decent poker player, Sam Fargo. Glad we could reach an understanding. I'll make some calls and see what I can find out about Frank Alton. Can't promise nothing, of course, but if we don't hear from him in 24 hours, the deal is off.
Charlie King was silent for a few beats. Then, keep your phone nearby. Sam disconnected. Remy asked, What if King thinks we've got the evidence with us?
He knows better than that.
Do you think he'll follow through?
Sam nodded.
King's smart enough to have insulated himself. Whoever took Frank probably made sure their faces were hidden. There'll be no trail leading back to King, so he's got nothing to lose and everything to gain by going along.
Then why do you look so worried? Remy asked her husband.
Do I?
You've got the squinty-eyed thing going on.
Sam hesitated.
Tell me, Sam.
We just got done beating up on one of the world's richest men. A sociopathic control freak who got where he is by crushing his enemies.
He'll release Frank. But something tells me King is sitting in his office, planning a counterattack.
Houston, Texas. 8,000 miles away, Charles King was doing just that. After hanging up the phone, he paced his office, staring straight ahead but seeing nothing beyond his rage. Muttering to himself, King stalked to his office window and stared out over the city. To the west, the sun was setting.
Fine, Fargo's, he rasped. Round goes to you. Enjoy it. Ain't gonna happen again.
He walked to his desk and stabbed the intercom button.
Marcia, get me Russell and Marjorie.
Yes, Mr. King, one moment.
30 seconds passed, then,
Dad, shut up and listen. Is Marjorie there?
I'm here, Daddy.
Jilan?
Yes, Mr. King.
What in the blazes do you three idiots think you're doing out there? The Fargos just called me and whipped me from pillar to post. They say they got pictures of UZ killing some local at the Langtang site. What went on there?
Russell answered.
I got a call this morning from the head of site security. He said they found a suspicious vehicle and raised the alarm. They found one man unconscious, but nothing appeared to be missing.
How'd he get knocked out?
They're not sure. He may have fallen.
Bull! Did we have any pending shipments?
2 trucks, replied Marjorie. As soon as the alarm was raised, they were evacuated by Colonel Joe's men. It's standard procedure, Daddy.
Don't lecture me, girl. Did the trucks arrive at the transfer point?
Russell replied, We haven't gotten confirmation yet, but allowing for delays...
You're assuming. Don't assume. Pick up the phone and find those trucks.
Yes, Daddy.
Z, what's this about a killing? Is it true?
Yes. One of the workers was caught stealing. I had to set an example. His body has already been disposed of.
King paused, then grunted.
Okay, then. Good work. As for you two morons, the Fargos told me they've got the Golden Man.
How? Marjorie asked.
Where?
They've got to be lying, Russell added.
Maybe so, but this kind of stuff is their bailiwick. It's why we brought him into this.
Guess we underestimated them. Figured Alton would be enough to keep him in line. Marjorie said,
Don't be too hard on yourself, Daddy.
Shut up. We gotta assume they're telling the truth. They want Alton set loose. Is there any way he could have seen anything or could identify anybody?
Jilan answered,
I looked into it when I got here, Mr. King. Alton knows nothing.
Okay. Go rescue him. Feed him, clean him up, and put him on the Gulf Stream. The Fargo said as soon as Alton's home, they'll meet with Russell and Marjorie and talk about handing over the whatchamacallit.
We can't trust them, Daddy, said Russell.
I know that, dummy. Just put Alton on the jet and leave the rest to me.
The Fargos want to play hardball.
They're about to see what real hardball feels like.